we as a company, right, our long-term objective is, can we predict cyber threats before it even happens? If you look at security right now, a lot of things get hacked, but we don't have it. Our objective is to make that prediction. And it might sound like a science fiction thing, but if you know, we can accurately predict rain today. How much it will rain, where it will rain, when it will rain, right? How do we do that? We pass a series of data sources through a mathematical or machine learning model, which makes these predictions, which is a similar thing we do at the company. We build different data sets and machine learning models. So our focus is on the data collection and these machine learning models, which is giving us these predictions. So our core platform, Xvigil, which is what we are selling, is a digital risk monitoring platform. Every external threat, any threat that can impact you outside your perimeter, we monitor them. Whether it's someone creating a fake domain in the name of your company or fake mobile application in the name of your company, to someone discussing cybercrime or mechanism to attack your company on a dark web forum, to any misconfigurations of your internet-facing digital assets and your internet exposure, all in a platform is what Xvigil does.
Dear listeners, this is your host, Siddharth Ahluwalia, founder of 100X Entrepreneur Podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank our sponsors, Prime Venture Partners. Prime is the first institutional investor in category-creating tech startups like Dozy, PlanetSpark, Neo, MyGate. Prime is now investing out of its fourth fund, which is more than $100 million. Today, I have with me Sripati Acharya, Managing Partner, Prime Venture Partners. Sripati, we would like to know from you, how does Prime work with the founders? And what is so different about Prime from other VC firms?
So Prime is a high conviction, high support VC. And so our process is different both during the evaluation and after the investment is made. During the evaluation, it's less of a typical Q&A, but more of a joint brainstorm where we are jointly looking and brainstorming on what the product could be and what the ultimate vision of the company could be in terms of its impact. And in the process, entrepreneurs engage with all the Prime partners. And this is very important because after the investment is made, the entrepreneurs can engage with individual partners directly who can assist in different areas. For example, we had a company which was looking for a US go-to-market. And there, we helped the company directly connect with prominent Valley angels and get an investment from prominent VCs there so that they could not only get an investor base, but also develop an ecosystem partnership in the US, which was very helpful to the company. So in that fashion, the engagement is both deeper and more intimate with the founders once we have entered the company.
Thank you, Sripati. Dear listeners, let's dive directly into the podcast now. Today, I have with me a founder who is a very good friend of mine, and he has built one of the top cyber intelligence companies from India. Rahul Sassi, founder of CloudSec. CloudSec is one of India's top cyber intelligence platforms, which gives intelligence on cyber threats to all B2C, business-to-consumer facing internet firms. Rahul, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Siddharth. Thanks a lot for having me here.
So, Rahul, first of all, you know, 100X Entrepreneur Fund is really privileged and grateful to be a part of CloudSec's journey. It's amazing what you have built in the last 5 years. And I can't fathom, right, what it took you and what are sacrifices made on this journey. So would like to start with, your background before starting CloudSec. Where did you grow up? Where did you study? And what got you introduced and interested into cybersecurity?
Yeah. First of all, Sudha, thanks a lot for supporting us, via the fund. Appreciate that. You know, about me, I've been always into cybersecurity. And the reason I was always into cybersecurity is I joined engineering with the aspiration of doing cool things. You know, I joined computer science engineering. And, as any kid, I wanted to do really cool things. That's why we joined engineering. But then I understood in engineering that, we are kind of far behind where the state of the art is. So anyway, I got access to internet at that point of time, because this is 2006. That's when I actually got access to internet. Once I got access to internet, all till that particular time, I always felt that I was kind of, I didn't belong anywhere, right? I mean, what is my identity in the world was kind of, in a bit of a confusion. But when I got access to the internet and I got access and I saw the cybersecurity community, I kind of understood that this is where I belonged. And the reason is, this is one community that kind of takes no for an answer, right? They always find a way to, you know, whether it's bypassing a security system or finding an innovative way to, you know, do something with security. They always, you know, they always stood in front of it. And then the community approach, right, that sharing and learning kind of all motivated. And I felt that this is where I belonged. So once I understood that, I started contributing back to the community. And so all throughout my college life, you could see a lot of papers, course, et cetera, getting published. But when I reached my seventh semester, there was a startup who was absorbing all these things. The startup was iSight, by the way, which is later got acquired by FireEye. Now it's Mandiant. Today it is getting acquired by Google. But anyways, so this startup was absorbing the work I was doing. They kind of invited me for an internship, which is 6 months. But my college was like, you can't go for a 6 months internship, you know, because you have to be in campus. And this is back in 2009, right? But then I understood that, well, see, this is, I figured out what I want to do with my life, you know, and this is what I want to do with my life. So why spend another 6 months in college just to get an engineering degree, right? Just a piece of paper. I mean, knowledge is, you could get knowledge from anywhere. And then this is the application of knowledge, which is going to happen when you have work. So I spent a week thinking and I quit engineering, went work for the startup. During this time, that's again, this in 2010 and 2015, worked for many three companies. One was this iSight, which is getting acquired by Google Cloud. The other one was Citrix. But while working for these companies, what I did is I continued publishing papers back to the community. So this got a lot of international attention. People from conferences on the other worlds are inviting me to their country. So I got the opportunity to travel to almost 22 plus countries free of cost, right? Meeting them, interacting with them. So every conference I go, there is a startup booth. And the startup booth, I was very curious. I used to go to all these startup booths, pick a brochure so I could read more about them. But every time I go to a conference booth, I understood one thing. You know, all these startups are from the US, UK, Israel, but there's always an Asian guy in the booth, which made me think, why do people have to leave their country to build these good companies? Why can't you do it here? That thought got into my head in 2014. 2015, I was at Citrix. In fact, I was the first guy to get hired in Citrix without an engineering degree. Things were really good. But then I understood that, well, you know, this is what I would want to do now, you know, go build something and see if we can get it adopted by the world. So that is how we founded CloudSec, founded the company in 2015. You know, I mean, the first 3 years were bootstrapped. You know, it was just me and then a bunch of people. The people are still with me right now. But we were just bootstrapping. And the idea was, can we build a company without funding, right? With limited support, can we build it out? And that's kind of an aspiration because, you know, I've read about all the other businesses, you know, that has come up. And if you look at businesses in 90s, 80s, you know, et cetera, they were, the venture capital funding system was not there. It was like a proper business coming up, right? So that was one of the aspiration. But bootstrapping for 3 years, we even made profit. We even made a team. We had enough customers. But they understood that if you have to scale, go really fast, you have to go the venture route. But yeah, so that has been the journey. We are now 150. We are touching 150 plus people, and we have almost 100 plus customers actually. So yeah.
Got it. And Rahul, can you also share, you know, the current ARR of CloudSec?
Yeah, so we have crossed 2, right, ARR. But if you look at the ACV, we are at somewhere more than that. You are at 2.5 plus ACV. We have some of the, more than talking about the numbers, right, we have some of the largest international, you know, consulting firms, executive consulting firms as customers, some of the largest tech companies in the world as our customers, some of the largest banks from India as our customers. So anything you touch on your daily basis, whether it's the brush you use to the Ola Uber cabs you book to the banking system you use, all these verticals are our customer because it's a cybersecurity company.
And you can also share, right, the milestones that you achieved either in number of customers or in terms of ARR from 2017 each year till this year.
Yeah. So the first 3 years of bootstrapping, we managed to only get seven companies as customers, right? And but these companies were the biggest company, you know, the largest bank to basically the Fortune 50 companies, you would say, right? The idea was that we'll just go focus on the big ones, because if the big ones come, you will get the small ones, not the small ones, the other ones eventually. If you can't make that, there's no point in it. So we were like, put all our efforts and time with a bootstrap approach to get these companies. So that was like the first 3 years. Right? But once we got our first Series A funding, we went from seven customers to 80 customers, right? Close to 10x growth in terms of customers. That much in terms of, we were at 250K ARR to 2 million plus ARR, right? That was the growth. So, which again, I mean, we were able to do things a little faster. If you ask the question, wouldn't you be able to not do this without investments? From what I've learned in that time frame, you know, you have to wait for the money to hit your bank, and then you have to use that money, spend that money. But that approach made, I would say, us wiser, right? Now, when we spend, we know where to spend. We spend on things only which is going to be beneficial for our customers. We don't spend on other things. We didn't spend a lot of money to reach 80 customers on marketing. We don't have a marketing team at all in the company, right? That was a very organic growth. One customer referred us to the other, right? And the word of mouth is how we got all those 800 plus customers, actually. Now that we have raised our 7 million, we will invest some in marketing, but the marketing is also, is our marketing initiative valuable to our customer? Is it adding any value to our customer? That's how we do our marketing.
And Rahul, if you can share the various products and what problem do they solve that CloudSec has built?
We as a company, right, our long-term objective is, can we predict cyber threats before it even happens? If you look at security right now, a lot of things get hacked, but we don't have it. Our objective is to make that prediction. And it might sound like a science fiction thing, but if you know, we can accurately predict rain today, how much it will rain, where it will rain, when it will rain, right? How do we do that? We pass a series of data sources through a mathematical or machine learning model, which makes these predictions, which is a similar thing we do at the company. We build different data sets and machine learning models. So our focus is on the data collection and these machine learning models, which is giving us these predictions. So our core platform, xVigil, which is what we are selling, is a digital risk monitoring platform. Every external threat, any threat that can impact you outside your perimeter, we monitor them. Whether it's someone creating a fake domain in the name of your company or fake mobile application in the name of your company, to someone discussing cybercrime or mechanism to attack your company on a dark web forum, to any misconfigurations of your internet-facing digital assets and your internet exposure, all in a platform is what xVigil does. And that's what our enterprise platform is. But on the other end, and by the way, what xVigil does is we can monitor all these different data sources, filter them through a machine learning system and trigger alerts. So you would get intelligence, you will get information on what is going to happen or what is happening about you, which you don't have either of visibility with xVigil. But with BigVigil, what we have done is we have put all of our data sources in a searchable manner. So you can go search on BigVigil. It's a free platform. You can put a company name and it'll list you all the threats in infrastructure, just in infrastructure related, right? And it's free. So if you want to just get, if you're a app first company, you can go search your app name and it'll give you all the security scores of the app, mobile apps. Same you can do with your web apps, you know? And that's free. So the model is, you know, we are obviously trying to make the community use the free version. And from the free version, people now pivot to the xVigil, because xVigil, you don't have to, on a daily basis, enter anything, any keywords. But with xVigil, you can set a predefined set of keywords. It'll automatically monitor all the threats and alert you proactively.
And can you share, right, how has the industry responded to these products, right, when you first launched, and how has these products grown over the years?
Yeah, so xVigil was a very, like I said, right, it was a word of mouth sort of thing, right? we got the first customer. The customer told this to 10 of their vendors. From there, you know, it was like growing in a gradual pace. But with Bivigil, the growth was, it's kind of like crazy, by the way, right? I mean, when we launched, we had almost 5,000 apps, data sets, and almost 100 plus users, right? Every month, that user base and the number of apps which are getting scanned is at a 2x rate, right? So today we have 500,000 apps scanned, and we have almost 5,000 plus corporate users on the platform, right? And we are expecting this to touch a lakh users, 100K users in total, and we would expect that to have almost 10,000 plus corporate users signed up to the platform.
And can you share with the listeners what is dark web and why, what is the threat to these companies from dark web or the information leaked on dark web, and who leaks this information?
First of all, dark web is an internet inside the internet, which is created. It is built on top of a Tor network. Tor is a privacy, it's like a VPN, by the way. Just put it. Tor is a VPN inside the network where people, everyone who is connected to the Tor network are anonymized. So you don't know who is connecting to that particular network. So whatever they post, whatever they write, you will never be able to know the original identity. That's a Tor network. On top of the Tor network, and it is built for anonymity, right? It is not built for anything bad. But on top of the Tor network came forums and communities where illegal trades happen. So what this trade happens is, well, there are good hackers and there are bad hackers. The bad hackers, when they get access to your information, your infrastructure, they will download some of those data and put that data for sale in different marketplaces. So there's an Amazon sort of marketplace inside the dark web. Exactly like, you know, you can go shop. You might be able to shop your competitor's data. You might be able to, you know, you might be able to search all the drivers of Uber. You know, someone would have hacked all drivers of Uber, and then they would put for sale anything, driver list of Uber for $10,000, right? Or they will come say, well, this is the username and password to a large bank's SWIFT server. SWIFT server is where you make transactions. So this is the access to that SWIFT server, and you can buy it for a particular price. Or they'll be selling a marketplace with every stolen credit cards. Because the thing is that the people who hack it don't indirectly use it unless you are a government entity. The other hackers, what they do is they put that data for sale so that someone else is actually utilizing it. And we published enormous reports where we call data brokers. Data brokers are the people who collect these data, and their full-time business is brokerage, right? And if you look at this space, and the space has been there for very long, right? I mean, back in 2010, Bitcoin, the trade of Bitcoin primarily was in these dark web market, and it evolved to where it is because that is where it all started. So one of our product capability is, you know, tell our customers whether anything which is related to them, their digital assets, their infrastructure data, their documents are being sold on the dark web. And that is just what, 15% of our capability, right? We have capability to bring in or look at data from any data source, whether it's dark web, whether it's surface web, whether it's deep web, whether it's network logs, any textual information, we have the capability to analyze and then give our customers actionable insights.
And Rahul, if you can share in your journey to reach currently, right, 2.5 mil of ARR, what has been the biggest challenges either from building team or building product or raising funding?
Hiring will always be a bigger challenge, right? I mean, again, so it is very simple. Okay, so there are three things: speed, quality, and money, right? Well, you can't have all three together at the same time. You know, if your focus is on speed, you will suffer in quality as well as money. If your focus is on money, you'll lose the other two, right? In our perspective, see, what we are building, the technology has to be relevant 10 years down the line as well, right? That's how we are building. We're not building something which becomes pointless, right, in a couple of years. And our ability to predict these threats will become very, very relevant. And it's only going to get relevant every year passes. So our quality part is very important, right? And quality is directly tied up with the quality of people you bring in to build the technology. And that has always been a challenge. But again, if you just compromise on quality, it becomes very fast. You can just add a ton of people. That I would say was the biggest challenge. So even if, let's say, we have 20 million more, right, this would still be the challenge.
And what have been the other challenges besides hiring the right set of people in your journey?
The hiring part is very tricky, right? You will never be able to... Okay, is there anyone in the world who can, at 95% accuracy, do the right hiring? No. Okay, you will always get better at it, right? You will get better at it. But this is one field, irrespective of how good you are, you will make a mistake. But that's not the same case with many other fields. You know, you always get better and the chances of you making a mistake comes down. But when it comes to people, you can still make that mistake. I would say, you know, when it comes to sales hiring, right, references are very important. This might not be applicable for engineers. Engineers, you can evaluate him with the code and then do an attitude test and then, well, you're sorted. But sales folks, you're not, you know, qualifying. You can't qualify them with an interview, which is why a good reference is important, right? That's one of the biggest learnings I had in terms of, you know, in terms of hiring good people, right? One of the things and one of the questions I always ask is, you know, if you are in a party, right, describe your work. Assume that you're in a party with 20 other people and you're speaking, right? And you have to speak your work in an exciting way. So basically, I'm trying to pull out from the candidate what exciting thing he has done, right? If you've done exciting things, you will be able to speak about that in a party, right? That I did this way. And there'll be a lot of clarity in those, depth in those, right? You will be easily able to spot whether he or she is taking up someone's work and then projecting it as his, right? So the clarity and depth is then what I would look for, and the passion in which he achieved those things. You know, for instance, I was hiring for this technical writer, right? The technical writer worked for one of the large firms, and she was saying that, well, I was given the task to do the technical writing of this product, and I created the whole document. But while creating the document, I also studied UX and UI. Why? Because that learning of how do you present the data in form of images, because it's not anymore text, you're putting images as well. So the learning I had from UX and UI also helped me in putting up this new work together. It gave me the flow, what images should I put where, how should I put it, etc., etc. Now you see that's a unique or a different way of doing a job. You can still do the job the same way every day, or you can always figure out a better way of doing that job every day. The second kind of people are the ones who are very passionate. They'll always figure out new ways of doing things. And that clarity is when we would want to bring in people. So I would say the depth in and the passion in which they have done things is what I would definitely look for. Yeah, and in the last but not the least, it's not about having the best people. You know, it's not like, you know, you just go fire the top 20 players in the world and bring them into a team. It's very simple, like how do you put a football team together? Let's say if Messi and Ronaldo and all the other top 10 players are playing for one team, that team is not going to fly. The job of putting together a team is identifying complementary skill sets, right? You don't need everyone to have this, you know, need this the same. But you need everyone to be working together, understanding how the other person complements them. And work as a team is more important than having the top players. So that is another bigger learning.
And Rahul, what's your vision for CloudSec for 2022 and 2023, 2024 in terms of ARR, in terms of capabilities you want to solve, in terms of regions that you want to expand to?
We have 100 customers. We are going from 100 customers to... we're going to go from 100 to 250 customers this year, this financial year. From there, we want to go from 250 to 400 customers the other year. So within 2 years, we'll grow, we'll reach close to 400 customers. And we have a way of, we have a very scalable way of doing it, right? With Vivigil and the way we are operating right now, we're getting a lot of incoming leads right now. We have customers now in Brazil, right, who's signing up. Well, we have customers from South Korea, right, who have now, you know, signing up to our free platforms and then are coming on board. So that is what we will focus on this year. Regions, we have almost 22 plus countries identified, which we think we need to establish a strong presence. There's always leads. We have customers in other regions also, but we will not spend enough efforts there. These are the regions we will focus. And because each of these regions, we think eventually can have a revenue potential of more than $1 million, right? Eventually, within an year, and then eventually it can grow into 5 million to 10 million in revenue. So that is how we have identified these regions, and that's how we'll be executing.
Got it. And Rahul, in your fundraising journey, right, the people you brought in during the journey, the funds that you brought in, right, what were the synergies that you were looking for, and what value add do you think that, you know, few of them or each one of them added during the journey? This is especially for entrepreneurs who are listening from the point of view of, you know, fundraising and learning from your journey from that.
Yeah. So this is very important, right? I mean, more than the fund, who is on the board is very important. That's one. And investors are like your team members. You'll have to see some value when bringing them on board, right? And I don't know if you remember, we spent a lot of time going back and forth, and I did something similar with some of the new investors that came in. You know, Kosla has this important saying, investors are employees whom you can't fire. And if you look at that, it is very accurate if you look at that statement. Because if you get the right set of investors, you can just go really well, right? They understand the vision, they can add a lot of value, they can be very supportive. And things are always going to get difficult in terms of business. There's no business that I've taken a smooth ride upwards. So it's very understand whether they understand your business, right? And are they ready to support? For instance, one of my angels even participated in the Series A round, right? Angel, we had a pre-Series A round, and then the Series A round they participated. They were like, you know, we are ready to support you throughout the journey because we like what you're doing. Right. So this kind of creates a very exciting set of people whom you're going to work with. And the org culture also can be driven that way with having the right set of investors. So I would say not just money, just don't just try to get the money, but try to get the right set of people who believes in your ideas and direction is very important.
And how do you leverage your investors? That's a very important skill for founders to develop.
Yeah. So in case of, one of the things I go the most is in terms of hiring, particularly. Introductions to something, the thing with introductions, you can always cold call someone also, right? You know, you can still pick up your phone and call the largest tech company CEO and just say that this is what I want. But what is more important is, they might know people who are good, right? And getting that reference from them is one thing I do. Second thing I look for is they have experience sitting on board of other companies. There's a lot of learning from, we are a cybersecurity company. There might be another technology company who's in the B2B who had some sort of learning, right? If they could share some of those learnings, without giving out much information, high-level learnings, that's very beneficial. And then I would say, these are the two primary things. And then corporate governance, et cetera, right? You would still bang on the board to have.
Rahul, also would like to understand from your own, thinking or analysis, what are your strengths and weaknesses as a founder?
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I like to do a lot, right? I like to spend a lot of time with the product and tech part. I also like to spend a lot of time in hiring, right? So these are the two things which I love doing. And when I say I love doing these things, I couldn't get enough of it, right? And then I have this huge data, you know, which I built, which basically talks about what am I good at, what am I an expert. When I say what am I good at, what am I an expert, what am I not an expert, right? So the idea is that things you are an expert, you should make the decision. Things you are not an expert, you should delegate. So now that I've delegated, what should I be persistent and what should I be flexible, right? I've given someone a task. What should I say that this should be like this, right? And what I can say, well, it's okay to be in that particular way. So I built a decision graph, which goes back to my personality, goes back to what I know, et cetera, to derive at these things. So persistent are things I know, things I am an expert in. So people and culture, I would put, I think I know that enough. Cybersecurity, I know that enough. Product and directions, I know that enough. The branding part, I know that enough. Things I don't know, policies. Those are the things I don't know, and I would delegate it, and I would expect someone to do it. And I can't make a comment or an expertise feedback because that's not my core expertise. Now, when it comes to people and culture, building internal, external training platform, because your teams needs to be constantly, you need to grow your team, right? Then only they will stick with you. So what are the things you need to grow in your team? You know, where do you invest that time? Again, some of those things will be taken by me. Some of the things will be delegated. Should I be confident or cautious, right? When I take a decision, what are the decision I say? I firmly believe that this is how we will only do it. Confidence. Or should I be cautious? I'm not sure. I need to get three other validation from three other people. Well, cybersecurity is something I'm very confident about. Cautious when it comes to products. Even though I'm an expert, I can still ask customers, our customer success team, sales teams, whether this makes sense or not. That's where caution comes, right? When should I go with data, vision or data? Sometimes the thing is you can't always do things just by data, nor you can't do always things just by vision. You need to have a mechanism to figure out what is vision driven. For instance, if there's anything futuristic, right, which doesn't exist, you can't say, well, you know, you can't then go with data and then say, well, this is how I would do it or this is how I wouldn't do it. A good example is most of the product functionalities or let's say a new product will never come from a customer. Customer will never know what is the exact solution. They will always have a problem. Right? Building the right solution is the innovator's job, right? And that is where vision comes. You'll have to look at, you will have to have a very forward-thinking approach and say, well, this actually makes sense if you build it, and this will actually solve the problem, which I just listened to. So, very long answer, but there's a series of structured thought process which I've written down, right, which helps me take some of these decisions easier and faster.
And if you could summarize, right, how could other entrepreneurs who could learn from this conversation help build that strength and weakness graph and then implement it in their organization for decision making?
So, in fact, I was actually thinking of publishing this this system. How would I? The point I'm trying to make is this system of decision making is very important. You need to document it because you are going to always be stuck. A lot of time will be gone because you're not able to make the decision fast, right? Once you have written these down, you're very clear on your decisions. And you can make those quick decisions, right? And which is very important in a startup. If you're just spending many days to make a decision, then you're not a fast-moving startup. So having this organized, put it down together as a doc, would be very, very, very simple thing, right? Should I take risk with something or should I minimize risk? What is that one thing? Should I take a higher risk? Well, you can take a higher risk in terms of a product functionality, but you can't take a higher risk in terms of a hiring. You can have more engineers in your team because they are always building new things. So even if you spend a lot of money there, it still gives you long term. How do I decide what is my long term and my short term investments? Right, that is also a decision tree.
And one question, you know, which I want to ask is, what's your vision for CloudSec? Let's say, do you want to make it a 100 mil ARR company? Do you want it to make it a IPO at some point in time?
See, our objective always remained, right? Can we build a great company out of this region? Was where we all started. The idea is to continue focusing on that objective. Can we build a great company out of this region and a great product is what I would say my focus is. Whether it's an IPO, whether it's ability to sustain as a private company throughout, that's like you're putting a target as such, right? Our objective is to build a long-lasting company that can sustain as long as possible. Whichever route we take, it's not matter, but that is what we are trying to do.
But great is a very subjective word. How do you define great for yourself?
Let's put a target of every company in the world knows I have used or is using CloudSec products, right? That I would say would be a great, because eventually if you look at this space, everyone would need cybersecurity. Even the smallest of the companies would need down the line, not immediately, down the line would need. And that opportunity is there. What do you need to capture those opportunity is what we should be thinking, rather than, see, I always say this, if you're just building a house, knowing that you would sell it eventually, you're not going to put all your thoughts and efforts into building that house. Rather, you're going to build a house knowing that you're going to live in that house forever. You'll design and build the best houses.
Thank you, Rahul. I think you have summarized it very aptly, right? How a founder wants to create a house, we want to live in it forever. Thanks for that. It's been a pleasure, Rahul, hosting you on the podcast. Thank you so much. It's been a privilege sharing this journey with you as a small stakeholder for me, for 100x Entrepreneur Fund. And, I wish 100x from here where we stand for CloudSec and our journey together.